And this category is Dads Who Left. Do I sound cynical? Am I misreading Interstellar? Welcome to VoiceOver Movies That Move Us. I'm your host, Heather Bigley, and I talk to people about the movies that made a mark, that led to cinematic epiphanies. And it's not always the movie you'd expect. Today, we're trying something a little different. I'm trying something a little different. I want to talk about a few movies that have made me think more and sometimes differently about fatherhood. And why would someone like me want to talk about dads on film? Like you, I was exposed to several ideal dads through cultural myth or movie, TV shows, and I could see how far away from that my own dad and subsequent stepdads were or was. At the time where I grew up, people also talked about fatherhood as something to avoid. Being a father meant you had been trapped or duped, that you had lost your masculinity, that you had been domesticated, and that your life was basically over. And as a religious person, I've lived with this idea from my religious tradition that God is a father, that the divine expresses itself in the lives of humans as a caring, powerful, paternal presence who doesn't give us what we want, but teaches us to want what is best for ourselves and the people around us. So those tensions and my own sensitivity have made my eyebrows lift when a dad walks on screen. So I've made up five categories that we're going to talk through. These are completely non-academic. I did not do any research. This is just me grouping like with like from the few movies I've seen. So let's start with dads who did a heck of a job. And this often means killing off mom. So number one, this list probably couldn't exist without To Kill a Mockingbird. Gregory Peck is Atticus Finch, the small-town lawyer who stands up to racism in his Alabama town. But he's also the widowed father of two. Atticus is patient, thoughtful, wise. He fights for what he believes in, even if it goes against what the community demands, even if he knows he's going to fail. He's also tall, good-looking, and a crack shot with a rifle. This might be why people love him so much. But it also might be that he's a father with legitimacy. He's powerful, even in that cardigan, and he speaks authoritatively. But this is backed up by love, concern, integrity. This is what makes him legitimate. He's not the kind of dad who says, "You must respect and obey me because I'm your father." Instead, he's the kind of man you want to be proud of you. I think it's interesting to note that in 1962, Gregory Peck played another lawyer father in the movie Cape Fear. This guy was named Sam Bowden, and he uses his family to bait a serial rapist into a trap. So not very Atticus Finch-like, and I think it helps us understand that just because it was made in 1962 doesn't mean we had this great idea of who fathers were at that time. We're still working through these tensions. So Atticus Finch is a great father, but it's important to point out that he's single. He's widowed. It's an interesting trope in American film because in America, single moms outnumber single dads by 3-1. And when the film was made, single moms outnumbered single dads more than 10-1. In fact, that might be why single dads are so popular in the movies. They are relatively rare in our society, and these films put dads into the role of being a nurturing presence, as opposed to simply bringing home a paycheck. These films ask male characters to recenter their lives and focus away from career aspirations to the aspirations normally assigned to mothers. Loving and caring and guiding their children, instilling moral values, teaching them the simple tasks of cleaning, feeding, and dressing oneself. Of course, Atticus Finch has help for all that hands-on bodily care from the black maid Calpurnia, which allows him to focus more on being an advisor and protector, but one that answers questions and seems emotionally present in a way that mothers are expected to be and do. Other movies that do the work of introducing single fathers into the home, as it were, are Kramer vs. Kramer, The Pursuit of Happiness, The Boys Are Back, My Girl, Mr. Mom, Captain Fantastic, Fly Away Home, The Descendants, Curly Sue, Chef, Hannah. So there's a lot. And sometimes this relationship or this introduction is played for laughs, sometimes for tears, and sometimes for some killer spy action and martial arts. These films often start from the vantage point that a motherless child is truly forsaken. The dads in these movies don't know basic skills in childcare or house management. And these movies show us how rich a man's life can become when he takes on those tasks, because they bring him physically and emotionally closer to his children. But the point of these movies isn't to put a man in an apron, or not only to do that. Ultimately, these films ask, what does a father bring to their child's life that's different from their mother? What can dads do that moms can't? Why are dads important? And this film, To Kill a Mockingbird, seems to say that dads teach kids about the outside world in a way that moms can't. Much of the relationship building in the film is Atticus explaining to his children why he's going to lose the trial he's going to lose and why that devastates him. Okay, category two, film two. My next film asks a very different set of questions. What are a father's responsibilities in relation to his kid vis-a-vis the greater community? And if your kid does something terrible, what does a father do next? Before Liam Neeson was rescuing his daughter from the bad guys in Taken, he starred in Before and After with Meryl Streep. This film came out in 1996. They play parents who must confront the reality that their son may have killed someone. What's a father's duty in such a situation? I think we know what Atticus Finch would do, the tall, good-looking lawyer with a thirst for morality. Liam Neeson's character, Ben, is no Atticus Finch, sir. He's an artist, just so you know. In fact, when Ben hears that the police first suspect his son Jacob of the murder of his girlfriend, Ben destroys any evidence he can find that might connect Jacob to the murder. Then the parents go looking for Jacob, who is missing for weeks. Jacob sends back these little postcards, but Ben never wants to let the police know that Jacob is reaching out. When Jacob finally returns, Ben vows to do whatever he can to keep him from facing the consequences of his actions, which leads to incredible tension in the family. One of the lines of dialogue from this film that echoes in my head from time to time is when Ben says,
"And Abraham is willing. He's very sad, but he'll do it. He'll cut his own son's throat if that's what God requires. Very obedient, Abraham, but very righteous."
But when they tell that story, they always miss the point. Who'd want him for a father?
Ben is talking about the Genesis story, where an angel commands Abraham to sacrifice his son Isaac to prove his loyalty to God. Abraham takes his son to a nearby mountain, prepares an altar, and then binds his son to it. Just as he's poised to kill Isaac, God intervenes and tells Abraham to release his son. It's a terrifying story in Jewish and Christian scripture. A version exists in the Quran as well. And the stories exist to teach people about the cost of obedience and to ask us, the reader, to contemplate that kind of sacrifice. We're supposed to understand from the movie that for Ben, his relationship with his son is much more important than any demands of law, God, or society. He wants to be the kind of dad that Jacob wants to have. And we're way past, should I be friends with my kids? I see you, Michelle Obama. Into, should you help the law convict your child of murder? What would you do? The film asks another significant question. What does love look like when your child has hurt someone else? Does love mean protecting your child no matter what? Or does it mean holding your child accountable for the good of the wider community? A similar tension has been explored recently in films about the parents of school shooters. Eric LaRue, We Need to Talk About Kevin, and Mass, to name just a few of those. These particular films explore what a parent's responsibility is for children who commit violence against their peers. Did they know their children were capable of such violence? Could they have stopped the violence? Should they atone in some way for their child's actions? Okay, number three. The third category, third film, I want to talk about Interstellar. And this category is Dads Who Left. This film was a gigantic hit in 2014, directed by Sir Christopher Nolan after his sojourn in the DC Comics multiverse. It stars Matthew McConaughey as Cooper, who's raising his kids on his own in a future dystopian rural America where we no longer believe in the space program and it never rains, but we still gather to play baseball every once in a while. Coop used to be a NASA test pilot, and when NASA comes calling again to help save humanity, he flies away. His daughter Murph never forgives him. We, the audience, spend the movie with Coop, doing all the exciting things that NASA test pilots do, traversing wormholes and saving colleagues on exotic planets, contemplating existential loneliness against the black dome of space, and then realizing that his kids are growing up without him through asynchronous video chats. Part of the film's climax is Coop communicating in code with Murph after light years of separation. They're able to understand each other, and Coop saves Earth, and Murph saves Coop. They're reunited on her deathbed where she's over 100 years old, while Coop is as young as he ever was. This, for me, seemed like a metaphor for my relationship with my own father. The point of all that plot summary is that the movie puts into play this tension between a man's responsibilities to the community and his responsibilities to his children. Men often make incredible sacrifices to, quote-unquote, save the world, and these include sacrificing relationships with their children. And of course, those sacrifices include really cool, exciting adventures that expose Dad to incredible insight and wisdom and scientific knowledge and make him a better man in ways that often these kinds of movies posit he never would have become as the father to children. Do I sound cynical? Am I misreading Interstellar? Maybe. But I remember watching that Tesseract scene in Interstellar in tears because so many of us get left while Dad goes on to do whatever he's going to do, and we're told that's just the way it had to be. Remember McConaughey screaming into the bookshelf, begging his daughter to keep him from leaving on his space adventure?
Don't let me leave, Murph. Don't let me leave, Murph. No!
Yeah, well, you're the adult, Coop. You're the one who was supposed to make the hard decision. And now you're acting like your kid had some power in this situation and that you would have done what she wanted. That's unfair. Other movies about Dad who leave are more critical of Dad. The Royal Tenenbaums, This Boy's Life, Hook, those are a few. You could even watch another space movie from the point of the child who gets left behind, Ad Astra, while Dad ventures off for scientific discovery. These movies work to sympathetically portray the complex emotions of the children who want their dad back, but also don't really trust him when he comes back through the door. Okay, fourth category, fourth movie. I want to talk about an oldie but goodie, David Lean's 1947 Great Expectations. The movie's an adaptation of the Charles Dickens novel and is celebrated for its incredible use of black and white photography and horror conventions. It's about a young boy, Pip, whose parents are dead. And so he's growing up with his older, stern sister, and she has this big softy of a husband. They live near the grand, dilapidated estate of Miss Havisham, who invites Pip to play with her adopted daughter on a regular basis. But wait, you say, there is no dad. He's dead. You're correct. And the dead dad category is related to the dad who leaves category. Dad has left, but it's usually understood that if Dad could have lived, how life would be different. And Dad's absence haunts the film because it's an absence that can never be resolved by the protagonist. Often the dead dad is used as a catalyst for the rest of the plot, like in The Lion King or Hamlet. Simba or Hamlet must grow up very quickly to avenge his father's murder, and the plot follows this development and the actions against the usurper. Why so many dead dads? You've probably noticed that in children's literature, the dead dad or dead parents, that's pretty common. The parents must die for the child to grow and develop and become who they're meant to be. The hero. That's why so many child protagonists in books and films are orphans or pseudo-orphans. Oliver Twist, Huck Finn, Annie, Harry Potter, the kids in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Often these characters try to find a dad to replace the one they've lost, or other men step in as alternatives, good or ill, to the father that might have been. In Great Expectations, Pip has two possible fathers, Magwitch and Joe. Magwitch is a terrifying escaped convict whom Pip frees from his chains and then feeds. Magwitch is brutal and cunning, but he's also incredibly loyal. Pip's generous act binds Magwitch to him for the rest of his life. The other possible father is Joe, Pip's brother-in-law. As I said, he's a kind-hearted man who aims to help Pip find a little bit of happiness, even in the constrained circumstances of their impoverished home. Neither man lives the rich, cultivated life that Pip yearns for, But both provide for Pip, and it takes Pip the length of the movie to see the value in their gifts. You might have guessed that this leads us to the actual stepdad movie. In fairy tales, stepmothers are wicked, but in the movies, it's the stepdad who is cruel. So there's like the stepfather horror movies of the 1980s. I think there's three of them. The Awful Stepfather movie teaches through negative example what we expect from a father. Where the stepdad is an authoritarian, dad's a listener. Where the stepdad would separate us from the mother, the dad helps us understand our changing relationship with her as we grow. Where the stepdad is physically violent, dad's protective and affectionate. So I'm going to sneak another movie in here, and it's Radio Flyer from 1992 that I saw in 1992 and really destroyed me. Directed by Richard Donner, who also brought us The Goonies, Superman 1 and 2, and Lethal Weapon, among others, the film stars a very young Elijah Wood named Mike. Mike and his little brother Bobby are abused by their stepfather, who insists on being called the king. He's duplicitous and violent and manipulative, and the children must somehow convince their mother that her husband can't be trusted. When that doesn't work, they decide their radio flyer will fly them away to safety. The film's an absolute heartbreaker, especially the ending. What happens? Well, you tell me, and do it without falling to pieces. Sometimes stepfathers in movies are good guys, or at least adequate guys. Sometimes we understand the situation from their perspective, something like the put-upon Richard Jenkins in Step Brothers. But that's kind of rare. Okay, number five. The last movie, not really, the second to last movie I want to talk about is Raising Arizona from the Coen brothers, in the category of unprepared new dad films. This film's first 45 minutes are hilarious, literally non-stop laughter.
Wake up, son. I'll be taking these Huggies and whatever cash you got.
And it has one of the best last lines in cinema.
I don't know. Maybe it was Utah.
The film is about a small-time crook, Hi McDonough, who falls in love with a police officer, Edwina.
The first time I met Ed was in the county lockup in Tempe, Arizona.
Don't forget his profile, Ed.
Turn to the right.
A day I'll never forget.
Turn to the right.
What kind of name is Ed for a pretty thing like you?
Short for Edwina. Turn to the right.
You're a flower, you are. Just a little desert flower.
Show the tattoo. Turn to the right.
Don't forget his fingers, Ed.
You're about the paddy wagon collided with the cement mixer, Ed. 12 hardened criminals escaped.
I heard that one.
Got a new bow?
No, hi, I sure don't.
Don't worry, I paid for it.
I do.
You bet I do.
Okay, then.
And after they wed, she wants to have a baby. Unfortunately, they can't, so they decide to kidnap a baby from a rich family who has just given birth to quintuplets. Along the way, we understand that Hai's really doing this for love of his wife. He feels disconnected from her intense emotions for children, but he wants her to be happy. Once they have the baby, she is always demanding him to change his ways and to rise to the occasion, and he's casting around trying to get advice from the men around him about what fatherhood should look like. And they don't know, and they're not very good examples. So this is a common enough trope in American culture and shows up in the movies too. And it's certainly evolved from young dad watching his wife metamorphose into a powerful pregnant mother, like in She's Having a Baby. And more recently, it's been about a dude finding out he's a dad after a casual hookup or sperm donation. So knocked up, the kids are all right, delivery man. You may say to me, what about movies with dads and moms living together in peace, trying to do the best they can? That certainly exists, though more often in television. Two movie examples that spring to mind are the working class parents of the teenage protagonist in Juno and the middle class parents of the teenage protagonist in Easy A. These guys are funny, thoughtful, cool, who work more as a unit than as an individual, and they're protective and helpful for their daughter. When we see dads on screen, we have to remember we're watching the modern version of social fairy tales. Actions and characteristics can be exaggerated for greater impact. But to resonate with us, these dads are built on universal experiences. Death, loss, fear, yes, but also safety, love, affection, pride, emotional intimacy. One movie I was incredibly moved by was Tangled, the animated Disney film from 2010. It's funny and action-packed. I mean, I love what happens with that cooking pan, but I completely melted when Rapunzel is floating on the lake, watching the castle release hundreds of floating lanterns in their hopes of reclaiming her. And I thought, what would it mean to have a dad, to have parents hope and long and love you that much, to search for you without stopping, to celebrate you so beautifully, even when you're nowhere to be found? And as I was watching that movie and thinking those things, I also felt, well, that's how God feels about you. So perhaps that's an impossible demand for most of our fathers, but I think we yearn for it anyway. Let me know what I missed, what I got wrong, in the comments. VoiceOver is a production of BYU Radio and is edited by Spencer Boyer.